We left off last time in the middle of, still in the middle of Perek Aleph, in the middle of chapter 1. And the pasuk that we're up to together is pasuk tes vav. Pasuk 15, Shmuel Aleph, Perek Aleph, pasuk tes vav. And we had left off in a little bit of a cliffhanger, because Chana had just finished pouring out her heart. She was standing in Shiloh, the city of Shiloh, where the Mishkan was, and she was davening to Hashem, perhaps like she never davened before in her life, asking Hashem, requesting a child, saying that she even made a vow as part of her prayer to dedicate the son, the child, to God. And we were told that Eli was watching. Eli was the Kohen Gadol, and he accused her of being drunk. He accused her of being drunk, and we kind of left off right there, waiting for Chana's response. And, you know, for those of you who couldn't hold back, and you read the Pesukim, so I can't ask this question, but you have to try each time you look at the Pesuk to pretend like you don't know the answer. And the question really is that when Eli makes this conclusion that Chana was drunk and he accuses her, so Chana's presented, I think, with a test. The test is how does she respond? And you know, we could go around the room, we could try to think how would you respond if it were you? And I think that the two most obvious approaches that Chana could have taken, and in reality she chose neither of them. Number one is she could have lashed out against Eli with anger. Right? Here she is. She's not feeling herself. She hasn't been eating. She's been crying. She's emotionally charged. And here, she just finished davening. She just finished praying. And the greatest rabbi in the land just yelled at her. And I think we would all give Chana a pass if she just let him have it. And many of us would be thinking, well, just let him have it. That's one natural feeling. The other feeling that she could have had is, wait a second, I just poured my heart out in front of God. And the man who is God's representation on this earth, the Kohen Gadol, the Shofet, just totally rejected me. It must be that God rejected me. And she could have just turned around, left the Mishkan, never daven again. And again, none of us would judge her in that situation. How could we? And the heroism of Chana is how she actually responds. And she finds this like middle ground approach to how to respond, in which she, number one, she stands up for herself, and number two, she still has respect for Eli. And that takes a lot, because many of us, if we were in, I'll speak for myself, if I was in that situation, probably all respect would have been lost. And Chana has, you know, you want to call it the maturity, the spiritual maturity to recognize that she was accused falsely. And if she can just express herself in the proper way, the situation will be diffused, and this will actually turn into a very positive dialogue. So we're picking up Pasuk Tes Vav in Perek Aleph. Vatan Chana. And Chana answered. She's answering the accusations of Eli. Vatomer, and she says, Lo Adoni. It is not so, my master. This is in chapter 1. If you're looking at the one that has the staple, you are not in chapter 1 and you're in chapter 2. This will be very confusing. Therefore, you should have this sheet that says chapter 1. And if we're privileged to finish chapter 1, we will also move on to chapter 2. There are many chapters for us to get to. So I will re-go at Pasuk Tes Vav. Vatan Chana. Chana answered Vatomer, and she said, Lo Adoni, no, my master. Isha Kishas Ruach Anochi. I am a woman of an aggrieved spirit. V'yayin v'shechar lo shasisi. And wine or strong drink, I have not drunk. Now we all know she hasn't even been eating, let alone drinking. V'eshpoch es nafshi lefnei Hashem. And what was I doing? If I wasn't drunk, what was I doing in the Mishkan? I was pouring out my soul in front of Hashem. Lifnei Hashem, which we're coming up to the high holiday season, Yom Kippur. We always talk about Lifnei Hashem. Lifnei Hashem is literally in the Beis HaMikdash. Literally in the Beis HaMikdash, the Kohen Gadol would be Lifnei Hashem. Lifnei Hashem titaru, before Hashem to become pure. So she's explaining, and she says, I was pouring out my soul. I have not drunk anything. Pasuk Tes Zayin. Al titain es amascha lifnei bas bli'ail. Do not place your maidservant, meaning herself, lifnei before or to be a bas bli'ail. A bas bli'ail is a base woman of low stature. We're going to see that term bli'ail. That's like one of the worst insults, or one of the worst ways you could describe someone who's just of ill repute in the Tanakh, at least in Sefer Shmuel, is to use the word bli'ail. And it could be for a man, could be for a woman. Bas bli'ail is for a woman. She says, don't paint me as that. Ki meirov sichi v'chasi dibarti adhena. For it is out of much grievance and anger that I have spoken until now. Meaning, I have been put in a very tough place. I've been provoked, and I've been angered, and I've been made this way, and that's why I was davening so much. And that's my case. That is my answer to your accusations. What do we see in these two psukim? So the first thing we see is that, first of all, how does she refer to Eli? She doesn't say scoundrel, who is accusing me. She says Adoni, my master, which is extremely respectful. And then we see, what is it? How does she refer to herself? She refers to herself as Amasecha, that I am your maidservant. I am lower than you. I am subservient to you. Obviously, he was not her actual master, and she was not his actual maidservant. But it's the language. It's first of all, it's being inviting. That if she doesn't confront Eli, if she answers back respectfully, it will go in one direction, and if she attacks him, it'll go a different direction. And many times, the human condition is that when we're boiling with our emotions, so we act a certain way. And if we would have the ability to diffuse our emotions, we would act a totally different way. And Chana, you know, as amazing as everything that we learned about Chana, each moment you could freeze and say, you know, if I told you this was the only thing we know about Chana, this would be worth it, you know, to name your daughter Chana or to wear the name Chana with a badge of honor. When she asks specifically, Al titain es amascha lifnei bas bli'ail, she doesn't want to be considered to be a bas bli'ail. So the Radak brings two explanations. One is the fact that she said the lifnei here in the pasuk before lifnei Hashem, she didn't want to be perceived by Hashem in such a way. She didn't want, and not that Eli's perception of her would be Hashem's perception, but she's declaring in a sense that she wants to be considered someone who is respected. She doesn't want to be considered someone not respected. The Radak's second approach is that it's actually a reference to Penina. That Penina, her co-wife, who was constantly provoking her and bothering her, Penina was a bas bli'ail. And if Eli continues his accusations, that's all Chana needs. It's all Chana needs is for Penina to find out that the Kohen Gadol thinks she's a drunkard. You can imagine what Penina, you know, it's just more ammo for Penina to throw more insults at her and more, and to provoke her even more. And so she was asking Eli, please stop. At the same moment that you have Chana in a situation of being caught off guard, so now we flip it to Eli. And now Eli's been caught off guard. Here he is. He thinks he's being a religious zealot. He thinks he's standing up for the honor of the Mishkan. And he's going to fight Hashem's fight. We saw the approach that it was his first day on the job, that it was the day that he became the shofet. And we know, we talked a little bit about the sensitivity the fact that you can't have any alcohol involved in the service of the Mishkan, of the Beis HaMikdash. So now Eli finds out that he's wrong, that he falsely accused a righteous woman, a woman who, A, seems to be in a very hard spot, and B, was just doing something very laudable, very, very, makes an impression, a national impression on the Jewish people, that the Gemara is going to go ahead and learn many laws of how we daven. And even for those who were able to join us this past Matzei Shabbos, when Rabbi Goldwich spoke, so he used a lot of our material because he was talking about Chana. And he spoke about how Chana is that pillar of tefillah. We even learned, I didn't know this, I learned this from him from going to the shir, that we're going to see at the beginning of Perek Beis when Chana thanks God. So there, apparently the Medrash picks up on 18 different phrases. The fact that Chana used 18 different phrases, that's why the core of our Shmona Esrei has how many brachos? 18. Later on it was 19. So really, if you sit there and you count it, it comes out as 19. But we still call it the Shmona Esrei, the 18. There were 18 core blessings, and one blessing was added on a drop later. So Eli now is in. Eli's in this position of what do I do? What's my reaction to being wrong? So Pasuk Yud Zayin. Vaya'an Eli, and Eli answered, Vayomer, and he said, Lechi l'shalom. You should go in peace. The Elokei Yisrael and the God of Israel, Yitain es she'ilaseich, should give you your request, should grant you your request. Asher sha'alt me'imo, that you made of him. Everything that you asked from God should go ahead and come true. Pasuk Yud Ches, before we explain. Vatomer, and Chana then said, Timtza shefchaska chen be'enecha, may your maidservant find favor in your eyes. At that point, the conversation closes. The dialogue is now over. Vatela cheisha ladarka vatochal, the woman Chana went on her way, and she ate, ufaneha lo hayu la'od, and her face, literal translation, was no longer. We'll explain that. So first, just something that I like to highlight is that maybe I mentioned part of this previously, but it's always good to review it, is how do you understand sentence structure in the Tanakh? You know that if you look inside a Sefer Torah, you look inside a written navi that's in a scroll. Some shuls have the practice. It's much harder for the person who has the honor or privilege of reading the Haftorah. But if you're not like our shul, you get to read it out of a book that has the nekudos, right? It's every bar mitzvah boy breathes a sigh of relief because now he's got the dots. But some shuls read it out of a klaf, the practice of the Vilna Gaon and others, and many yeshivas, they do it that way. It looks like a little Torah, and it's the Navi. But how do you know where a sentence begins and a sentence ends in a Sefer Torah? There are no dots. There's no punctuation. So the cantillation notes, the trup that we have, the way that we sing and we say the sentence, there's something in the end called a Sof Pasuk, which is like what we would call a period. But there's also kind of like what we would call a comma, or what's a pause in the sentence, and that's called an asnachta. The asnachta underneath if you have it, and it's not going to show up in the sheets that I gave you. I apologize for that. But underneath the word chein be'enecha, in the middle of pasuk yirches, underneath the word be'enecha is an asnachta. If you're looking inside the book, so the asnachta is the one that kind of looks like a wishbone. And asnachta is a pause. And so here it fits, because vatomer timsa shivchascha chein be'enecha, those are the last words that Chana says, and there's a pause in the pasuk. The second half of the pasuk is telling, and she went on her way. So the fact that, if you had to summarize what Eli was doing, Eli gave her a blessing. Eli gave her a bracha. The Gemara in Maseches Brachos, on these pages we're talking about Chana, learns from here. There's a halacha to learn from here. That if you're ever choshed b'ksherim, if you ever accuse someone who's really kasher, but you think they are not kasher, if you accuse someone falsely, so what you're supposed to do is apologize, but you're supposed to give them a bracha. You're supposed to give them a bracha, and it's not a joke. And we know that there are different type. The way bracha works in general is a little hard for us to understand. But bracha, blessing, comes from Hashem. That's why when you make a bracha on a drink, so the first word you say is baruch. What does baruch mean? It doesn't mean blessed. That's what every translation says. What does that mean? Blessed are you, God? What does it mean? God is blessed. He needs blessing. It doesn't make sense. The word baruch, the proper way to understand the word baruch is makor habracha, the source of all blessing. Where does all blessing come from? Baruch atah. You, Hashem, are the source of all blessing. You're the makor habracha. So the way Hashem set up this world is that bracha comes forward from Him, and it can come in many different ways. When a fellow human offers another human a bracha, it has significance. It has ramifications. What the Gemara refers to as a birkas hedyot. You might think that you're not so special, but again, you are not. Not you. You all think you are all special. I don't think I'm so special. But when I open up my mouth and I give a bracha, it's not me, but Hashem will come through that. It's kind of like what the Kohanim do. When the Kohanim give us blessings, it's not that the Kohanim are blessing us. The reason why they raise their hands and they stick their hands out towards the people is that it's almost like they're like a channel, that God's blessing is coming through them. It's Hashem's bracha. We can thank the Kohen after he gives us the blessing, but it's not his blessing, it's Hashem's blessing coming to us. The same thing on a Friday night when a parent or a grandparent blesses a child. It's not that the parent has these unique powers. The words are Yivarechacha Hashem. Hashem will give the blessing, and you're just the conduit for the blessing. So the Gemara says we learn from here that if you're choshed b'ksheirim, really we shouldn't be judging anyone. We're not supposed to be judges, right? Unless you're an actual judge in a court, but you're not supposed to be judging people. But human nature, unfortunately, we judge, and you shouldn't do it. But if you accuse someone falsely of something, you're supposed to then actually give them a bracha. What Chana does is also amazing, because when she answers, how does she answer back to Eli? What's the last words of this dialogue at the beginning of Pasuk Yud Ches? Was Vatomer? She said, "Timtza shevchas chachen beinecha." May your maidservant find favor in your eyes. Says Rashi, three amazing words: Levakesh aleha rachamim. She was leaving Eli and saying, "Don't forget about me. Continue to daven for me." Levakesh alav rachamim. Continue to ask on my behalf mercy. And here you see another. Not that we needed, but it's always another amazing quality of Chana. Is that even after this experience, she recognizes that the Gadol Hador, the great sage in front of her, made a mistake. But we all make mistakes. The Gemara tells us there are only four people in the history of the world that never did a sin. Who are the four people? It's a good trivia question for, I don't know, Jewish trivia night. The four people are as follows: Binyamin, the son of Yaakov; Amram, the father of Moshe; Yishai, the father of David; and Kilav, the son of David. Kilav, the son of David. And that's how the Gemara said. The Gemara actually mentions them with these relationships. So the Dean Emeritus of Yeshiva University, Rabbi Zvolun Charlap, was a long-time Rav, I think still is a Rav officially in the Bronx. He always makes the joke that his congregation gave him a lifetime contract, but they forgot to give themselves a lifetime contract. So he likes to quote this Gemara, and he explains, why does the Gemara say, keep telling us who their relative is? The person who didn't sin, it says, oh, Binyamin was the son of Yaakov, and Moshe, and Amram was the father of Moshe, and the last two were related to David. It's because Hashem is not necessarily looking for the one who is actually perfect, but he's looking for the one who's striving to be perfect. That the other individuals who are not on the list, Yaakov, Moshe, and David, the fact that they're not on the list, it means that they were not perfect, but they strived for perfection. And that's something to be looking towards. So Eli is the Gadol Hador. He made the mistake. And Chana is still going to look to him as the Gadol Hador. Her parting words, according to Rashi, is she's asking, I mean, she says it here, Timsa Shefchas Rachein Be'enecha. She already got her bracha. She could just say, goodbye, thank you, I'm so happy that you admitted to your mistake. She didn't say that. She might have said something else, but we only know the words that are recorded here. Batomer, she said, Timsa Shefchas Rachein Be'enecha. She still wants to be able to find favor in Eli's eyes, that Eli should continue to daven for her. She still is looking to him with respect. The pasuk concluded with the phrase Ufaneha lo hayu laod. Her face was not the same. Her face was not the same. So the Maharal comments that a face is like a window into the heart, and when a person is troubled, you can tell. If you're used to the person, you know what their demeanor look like. So that's how you know when one of your loved ones is having a bad day. You just have to look at them in the face. A kid comes off the bus, his face says the whole thing. I think one of the Bali Musar once said that your face is like a Rishus HaRabim. It's like a public thoroughfare, because that's why you always have to try to have a smile on, because your face is out there for everyone. So the Maharal is explaining that when Chana was so troubled, her face looked troubled. She looked sad, because she was sad. This experience of A, the davening, and B, receiving the bracha from Eli, Ufanel lo hayu la'od, her whole demeanor changed. We see that factually. Before, she wasn't eating. Now it said Vatela Chayisha Ladarka Vatochal. She ate. She ate again. Her spirits were lifted, and it was noticeable. It was tangible. Her face was kind of glowing. The experience was extremely positive for her in the end. Pasuk Yud Tes. Sure. So the Metzudos Tzion picks up on your point, and when it says Sheila Seich, he writes Kimo Sheila Seich be'Aleph. He says it's the same word with an Aleph. Now, answering your question, why there's no Aleph?
The Sha'alt follows with the Aleph.
So Rashi says Chaser Aleph. It's missing an Aleph. Lidrosh bo Lashon Banim. In order to expound from it a language of multiple children. That She'ela Seich, maybe her original request actually was, she kind of said both in her original request, because if you go back to Pasuk Yud Aleph, in her original request, she asked, V'nasata la'amascha zera anashim, which sounds plural, but then she says, Unisativ la'ashem, and I'll give him, which is singular. So perhaps what Eli was trying to say is somehow if there's no Aleph, then it could be more plural. This is the best answer I'm going to give you. We all have our strengths, and grammar is not mine. Unfortunately, I was named after my grandfather, who was an expert in diktuk and even wrote books in diktuk. And I hope in other ways I'm named after him. I hope in other ways I'm making him proud. He was a principal of Manhattan Day School for about 15 years in the 1950s and 60s. But diktuk, I didn't inherit that in the DNA. Maybe it's his fault for not being there to teach me. But that was Hashem's doing.
Can I ask you? You made a reference to that Penina was in fact a lowly woman. Is that what I understood you to say?
The meaning when you go with the approach of what she was doing to Chana.
Oh, okay.
And how she was provoking her.
Not that she was a drinking person.
No, not necessarily that. Just in terms of her attitude towards Chana. And the Radak is saying, imagine if Penina finds out that the Kohen Gadol thinks Chana is a drunkard, right? Who would you, if you're Penina, who would you believe? Chana or the Kohen Gadol? Mm-hmm. You probably, especially if you don't like Chana so much, which she apparently perhaps didn't. So that's what it meant. So what happens next? Pasuk Yud Tes. Vayashkimu baboker. They wake up in the morning, the whole family, Elkanah and his whole entourage. Vayishtachlu lufnei Hashem, and they bow down before Hashem. Vayashuvu vayavo el besam haramasa, and they return and they come to their home. They go back to Ramatayim Tzofim. They go back to Ramah, where they live. Because that's normal, meaning the idea of going up to Shiloh is to visit around the time of the holidays, to offer your karban, and then you go home. Vayeda Elkanah es Chana ishto, and Chana knew Elkanah knew Chana his wife, meaning in the biblical sense that they were intimate together. Vayizkireha Hashem, and Hashem remembered her. He remembered what she had asked. He remembered that she didn't have children and that she only wanted to have children, and everything was about to change. We mentioned this phrase, Vayizkireha, so we mentioned it last week when we were going through the similarities between Rachel and Chana, so we mentioned that connection. So if you take a look on the extra sheet that I handed you, the source material for Sefer Shmuel, chapter 1a, source number 1, it's a short Gemara in Rosh Hashanah. This is very fitting to be learning this literally a couple of days before Rosh Hashanah, where the Gemara tells us on Daf Yud Aleph Amud Aleph, B'Rosh Hashanah Nifkada Sara Rachel V'Chana. Three of our great heroines, who all struggled to have children, were all remembered specifically on Rosh Hashanah. Sarah Imenu, Rachel Imenu, and Chana. Minalan, how do we know that? Amar Rabbi Elazar taught, Asya Pkida Pkida, Asya Zechira Zechira. There's a connection in the stories that the word Pkida is used and the word Zechira is used in all of these stories, that it matches up. Ksiv B'Rachel, the Pasuk says by Rachel, which we quoted last week, Bereshis Lamed, Vayizkor Elokim es Rachel, that Hashem remembered Rachel. Uksiv Bechana, and it also says about Chana, the pasuk that we just read here, Vayizkireha Hashem, that Hashem remembered her. Vaasya Zechira Zechira Mirash Hashanah. And we also know that the word Zechira plays such a major role. It's mentioned by Rosh Hashanah. Dechsiv, the pasuk says in Parshas Emor, Shabbason Zichron Trua. A remembrance of Trua, that one of the days, one of the names that we have for Rosh Hashanah is Yom Hazikaron. The Yom Hazikaron, the Zichron Trua, the remembrance of the Zichron Trua, the Yom Trua, so there's an idea of remembering. And that's why Chana and Rachel and Sarah all remembered on Rosh Hashanah, and that's one of the main reasons why the Haftorah of the first day of Rosh Hashanah are these very psukim. I would say that if this is our fourth class, I believe, on Shmuel, so you've now spent 4 hours investing in the Haftorah of the first day. I would say if I could spend that much time preparing for every aspect of Rosh Hashanah, I'd probably be in good shape. I don't, you know, we don't usually spend 4 hours preparing for a Haftorah. That's not bad. Now we come to the second day. That's a separate question. So here the Gemara is telling us that they were mentioned in Rosh Hashanah, which makes it's the idea of why we have the Haftorah of Chana on Rosh Hashanah. And there's, you know, maybe there are other ideas of hope. You know, when you're standing in Rosh Hashanah and you're davening and you want to have your tefillahs answered, so having Chana in your mind, literally right before, the second before you hear the shofar, you're hearing these words, you're hearing the story of Chana. And that, you know, for the sensitive soul, you know, you kind of, what's playing over in your mind when you're hearing the shofar is Chana and her story and her ability to connect through tefillah. So here we have in Pasuk Yotes that she was remembered specifically on Rosh Hashanah. Pasuk Chaf, what it actually translated into something. Vayihi l'skufos hayamim, and it happened within a period of time. Vatahar Chana became pregnant. Vateled bein, she gave birth to a son. Right, this is not a daily diary. We're not told all the events. We just fast forwarded a certain amount of time very quickly, but that's what the Tanakh does. Vatikra es Shemo Shmuel. She named her son, as we all know, Shmuel. Why? Says the pasuk. Ki mehashem she'iltiv. She said, because from God I requested him. That somehow the source of Shmuel's name has to do with the term Sha'al. And the Radak comments that Shmuel is kind of like a conjunction. It's a putting together of the following two words of Sha'ul Mikael, borrowed or asked from Hashem, that she had asked for a son from God, and this is he. And she put the name together. And there's also the idea that inside the word sha'al is the term to borrow or to lend. Because Hashem was giving her a son, but she was then going to lend her son to the service of the base of the Mishkan, really for his life. She was dedicating him, as the Pasuk had mentioned, when she said her request was, she said, "Unisativ la Hashem kol yimei chayav." I'm going to give him over to God all the days of his life. So whether he was being lent to God, or maybe you understand that really he belonged to God, it was only that he was lent to Chana for a little bit, because for the majority of his life Shmuel spent with Eli and the Mishkan and being in the service of Hashem. So that's how Shmuel got his name. So we fast forward a little bit, Pasuk Chaf Aleph. Vayal ha'ish Elkanah v'chol beso. And the man, Elkanah, went up, and all of his household, meaning it was time to go back to Shiloh at some point. So whichever approaches you want to go with, if he went annually, if he went for every Yom Tov, it came to the next juncture where he would be going up to go to Shiloh, Lizbach l'Hashem, to bring sacrifices to Hashem, as Zevach Hayamim, the sacrifices of the days, the Es Nidro, and his vow. And his vow. So what does that mean? What does that mean, his vow? So we know that in the world of Karbanos, which we haven't kept, unfortunately, we haven't had the privilege to keep in close to 2,000 years, a person can decide in the course of the year to make a vow. Something happened good, right? The stock market went up. You made a lot of money. You had a really good day. You want to make a vow that you're going to bring a karban. And you walk into the back, and you find Shirley the cow. I hope no one's named Shirley, but whatever, Bessie, whatever name, a good name for a cow. And you walk, and you say, I'm dedicating you. You cow are going to be a karban. Or you don't dedicate an actual animal. You just say out loud, verbally, and there's halachically binding that you're going to bring a karban. So then you have a year. You have all three holidays to actually bring the korban. So what a person would do is the next holiday, whether it's Pesach, Shavuos, or Sukkot, they would bring, and in addition to bringing the korbanos that you have to bring for the Yom Tov, let's say it's Pesach, so you have to bring a korban Pesach, you would also bring your korban of a vow. So the Radak brings that maybe what Elkanah did is that in something very good happened. His wife Chana had a child, and he must have made a vow to bring another karban in addition to his normal routine of bringing karbanos. The second approach, when it says ve'es nidro, it might actually be a reference to the baby, to Shmuel. Because perhaps the vow that Chana took to dedicate the son in the service of God, that was binding on the husband as well. And he's basically saying, okay, we got the child. And there was a vow taken that the child must be given over to God. So now's the time. So it says when he's going, the Es Nidro is he had intentions to take Shmuel already. However, when the father says it's time to take the kid on a trip, it's not necessarily going to happen. It has to run through the mom. We all know that. Pasuk of Beis. V'chana lo alasa. Chana did not go up this time. Ki amr le'isha, for she said to her husband, Ad yigamel hanar ve'av Yosef. First, when the child is weaned, right now I'm still nursing the child. The child still needs to be nursed. It needs its mother. So we're going to wait, Ad yigamel hanar, until the child is weaned, ve'av Yosef, then I will bring him. V'nira es p'nei Hashem, and then the child will appear before God. Vayashav Sham Arolam, and the child will dwell there forever. The child will dwell there, you know, permanently. Pasuk of Gimel. Vayomer la Elkanah Isha. So Elkanah, her husband, answered back to her, Asi hatov be'inayich, you should do what's good in your eyes. Shvi ad gamlechoso, you should remain here, remain in Ramatayim Tzofrim, remain at home until the child is weaned. Ach, but Yakem Hashem es Devaro, Hashem should fulfill his word. She dwelled there, she nursed her son, Adgamaso, until he was weaned. If I asked you right now to look at this pasuk, not pick up your eyes, look at the pasuk, and play a game that maybe you haven't played in a long time since you watched Sesame Street with children or grandchildren, which phrase is not like the other? Which part of this pasuk seems to be rather strange? It seems to be telling us a story. He wants to maybe bring the child. He's going up. Chana is staying. And Chana says, it's not time to bring the child. And Elkanah says, okay, you're right. Achya came, Hashem is Devaro. It's like out of left field. What does it mean? And it's very strange. It clearly does not, it doesn't fit the dialogue. So we need help. So on the source sheet that I handed out, we have Rashi. We have Rashi to help us. Normally, it's very hard to go through Chumash or Gemara or Navi without Rashi to help us. There's a very, very wonderful passage. You shouldn't have to ever read it. But in the kinos of Tisha B'Av, so you know why there's an old practice. You know the kinos are always those paperbacks, mm-hmm. Like they look like they're falling apart. Why do we do that? So the idea was that they wanted you to put it into Seamus. Right. After Tisha B'Av, you should bury it in the ground because you should have enough hope that there won't be another Tisha B'Av. You shouldn't have it in a nice book on the shelf because you're not going to need it. Hopefully Mashiach is going to come. There's so the belief that it's going to happen. That's what it should be. However, in addition to that, there's been some phenomenal commentaries on the kinos that for people like me who can't read the kinos and understand it, so having the printed books are very that's a good idea. And what I, in my humblest opinion, the whole world of thought that Rabbi Soloveitchik Zatzal left for us, I think the greatest gift that he gave, you know, simple people like me, is the kinos. The Rabbi J.J. Schachter put together Rabbi Soloveitchik's thoughts on the kinos. You don't have to go, and I'm not telling you not to go to shul. But you don't have to do anything but buy that kinos and sit with it. You could, if no one's bothering you, you could sit with it the whole day, just reading each phrase and each explanation. It makes it real, and it makes you emotionally attached. And that's, you know, so many of us are looking for meaning on Tisha B'Av. We want to spend the day, and every, you know, so many wonderful organizations try to make videos and fill up the day with things that are closely associated, or maybe not so closely associated with destruction. Here, the kinos is actually associated with the destruction and the explanation. So in the explanations of the kinos that deal with the destruction during the time period of the Crusades, specifically, so Rabbi Soloveitchik and anyone who's familiar with his thought, how he feels about the Rambam. There was no one who looked at the Rambam, Maimonides, as a hero in Torah like Rabbi Soloveitchik. Rabbi Soloveitchik made the following statement, that had Maimonides not come into existence, the Jewish people, we would have been lacking, but we would have survived. He said, had Rashi and his school of thought not come into the picture, Torah might have been lost from the Jewish people. What Rashi did and his ability to explain, I mean, there's no such thing as a fourth, fifth grader that learns Chumash without Rashi. No such thing. You can't even find a Chumash without Rashi. The Chumashim that have other commentaries also have Rashi. The Art Scroll Gemara tells you in the beginning pages, any time that they don't tell you who they're quoting Rashi. Meaning the regular explanation in the Art Scroll Talmud is Rashi. So we'll look to Rashi to help us with this phrase that seems to make no sense. So in source number 2 on the sheet, we have Rashi, Ach Yakem Hashem Dvaro, Hashem should keep his word. So the first explanation is, you, Chana, so you requested Zera Anashim. You requested multiple children. The Eli Besarcha Beruach HaKodesh, and Eli kind of gave the good news to you through Ruach HaKodesh when he said, Elokei Yisrael, the God of Israel, Yitena Shelaseich, should give you your request for multiple children. So as Elkanah is heading out, he says, Yakem Hashem es Devaro, Hashem should keep his word, we should be blessed to have many children. So it doesn't necessarily answer the awkward placement of the phrase, but at least it gives it meaning. That as he's leaving her and he's saying, do what's good in your eyes, you'll stay here till we wean the child. And then maybe in his mind he's thinking, well, after we wean the child, we're going to not lose the child, God forbid, but we're going to lose having the child around. It's not the same thing. It's obviously very comforting to know that your child is doing, but it's not the same thing as a child being in the house. So he's saying, Ach, Yalkem Hashem Dvara, Hashem should keep his word, meaning that we should have more children. Second approach, Rashi in the next line quotes from a Medrash. Umedrash Agada, one of the Agadic Midrashim, Rabbi Nechemya b'shem Rabbi Shmuel bar Rabbi Yitzchak, Omar said as follows. This is what happened in that time period. B'chol yom v'yom baskal yotzes u'mefotzetzes ba'olam. Every single day, a heavenly voice would come out into the world, and it would spread. V'omeres, and the heavenly voice would say, Asid tzadik echad la'amod. One day in the future, there's going to be a very righteous person who will stand up, Ushmo Shmuel, and his name will be Shmuel. So what does every good Jewish mother do? V'chol isha shehoisa yulad his bain, hoisa korah shmo Shmuel. My son is going to be my son. Right? Can you say a joke in the middle of a medrash?
Yeah.
All right. So there's a joke about this woman, you know, Mrs. Goldberg, that her son, that's a famous joke, her son is elected president. Her son is elected president of the United States. So he calls her up and he says, Ma, are you going to come for the inauguration? She says, you know, it's a hard trip. It's so much. He's like, I'll send the car for you. She says, you know, I have nothing to wear. He says, Mom, I'm the president of the United States. I'll have someone go shopping for you. So she finally agrees to come. And she's sitting there at the inauguration watching her son get sworn in. And she's sitting next to the Secretary of State. And she elbows him and she says, you see, my son, his brother's a doctor. It's a famous, it's you've heard it, but it's still good. So every Jewish mother thinks that their son, so here you have a source for it. Every Jewish, v'chol isha shayyulet is bain, every woman who had a child, ha'isokara shemo Shmuel, she would name the child Shmuel. Kevan shayu roen es ma'asav, but then they would see, you know, he didn't get straight A's, he didn't have the best midos, ha'yom remains a Shmuel. They would say, oh, he must not be that Shmuel. I guess the mother didn't say that, everyone else said that. The Kavod Shenolad Zeh, when this child was born, the Rao Masav, and they saw his actions, Omru Dome Shezehu. They already saw something in the child from the beginning, and it looked like he was on the path. Vizeu Sha'omar Yakem Hashem is Devaro, Hashem should keep his word, Sheyezeh Shmuel Latzadik. That this should be, and it was, the righteous Shmuel. So how you want to understand the Medrash, whether you understand it as literal, or you know, but it means that there something was in the air, and the Jewish people were clearly in need of something. We talked about in our introduction. We talked about the negative stories of Pilegesh Begiva and of Pesel Micha. They needed something. They needed a leader. They needed a spiritual leader. They needed a tshuva movement, as we'll see. So Ach Yakem Hashem Tvaro, this child, there was a hope, there was a prayer that this child should be that individual. So Elkanah went and Chana stayed. Elkanah went and Chana stayed. Pasuk Chav Dalet. Vata'aleu, right? Because the pasuk ended that she nursed the son ad gamlauto until she weaned him. So now we're at that juncture. Pasachav Dalet, Vataleu ima kasher gimaltu. She brought the child up with her when he was weaned. Bifarim shlosha, with three bulls. The eifa achas kemach, and one eifa of flour. Venevel yayin, and a flask of wine. Vativiehu beis Hashem shilo. She brought him to the house of Hashem in Shilo. Vahanar nar. And the child was very young, double language. How old was he? So it's hard to understand. But the consensus seems to be that he was about 2 years old. 2 years old, because the fact that it puts a connection to weaning, we mentioned this, I think, last time, that the Chazal's normal time for weaning a child, for nursing, was 2 years. I think we've changed. I think most mothers don't nurse for that long. I don't know if, you know, doctors recommend it, but that everyone is their own case. But 2 years old. Now, the reason why it's a little hard for us to understand is because when we think of a two-year-old, we couldn't imagine, you know, it's hard enough to drop a, if a person has to drop a two-year-old off at daycare for the day. That's pretty hard to do. But to go ahead and put the child in the service of the Mishkan, and in addition to that, I'm going to share with you in just a few moments before we close, a medrash that's like pretty mind-boggling to think it was involved with a two-year-old. So you have to use your medrash card here, and you know, maybe he was a drop older than that, or maybe 2 year olds weren't the same 2 year olds. You have to do something like that. If you're not so comfortable doing that, then hopefully you'll come up with a better approach. I'm pretty comfortable playing those cards, a miracle card, and all those things. I'm okay with. But if you're a literalist, the fact that it's if you don't want to go with the word of the doc, v'hanar nar. So normally we actually refer to a nar as a young lad. You would call a 12-year-old boy a nar. You would even call a 16, 17-year-old boy who's not married, you might call that one a nar. Just like the female version, a nara. A nara is a young girl. A nar is a young boy. So if you're taking a literalist approach, then the medrash will make more sense with that, because as we'll see. So she brings him pasuk chaf hey. What we're going to do is actually read four psukim in a row and then explain them. So pasuk chaf hey, the last couple of psukim of the perek. Vayishchatu es hapar, they shechted the ox. Vavieu es hanar el Eli, and they brought the child to Eli, the Kohen Gadol. Vatomer, and this is what she said. Bi Adoni, please, my master. Chei nafshecha Adoni, by your life, my master. Ani ha'isha hanitzeves imcha bazeh. I am the woman who is standing by you, l'spala la'ashem, to daven to Hashem. Pasuk of Zayin, el hanar hazeh hispalalti. It's this child that I prayed for. Vayitein Hashem liya she'elasi, and Hashem granted me, he gave me my request. Asher sha'alti me'imo, that I requested of him. Pasuk of Ches, v'gam anochi hishaltiu la'Hashem kol hayamim asher haya. And also I dedicated him to God, dedicated the child to the service of God all of his days that he lives. Hu sha'ul la'Hashem, he is dedicated to God. V'yishtachlu sham la'Hashem, and she bowed down, and they, sorry, I messed up. V'yishchatu sham la'Hashem, it gets translated, and he bowed down to God. The he is ambiguous, which we'll discuss. So, very shortly, Rashi says on the phrase, Bi Adoni, please my master, that here she was giving her son over, and she was saying, you know, like, will you take care of him? Will you take care of him? Will you let him become your student? However, if you sit there and you look at her tone, specifically in Pasuk Avav, seems like this is a little strong language to be delivering the child. Again, it's supposed to be a peaceful transition. She's saying, Bi Adoni, please, my master, Chei Nafshecha, by your life, my master. It's. I might be making it more dramatic, but the Pasuk, I think the Pasuk is dramatic. And so Chazal pick up on this, and the last source on the additional source sheet that you have is a Gemara in Maseches Brachos, Daf Lamed Aleph Amid Beis, and it provides us with what was really happening at the time. Apparently, Chana had to be speaking forcefully. Apparently, something had happened that she needed to step up to the plate again, kind of acting, you know, as protective mother in front of Eli. And here we definitely with the ideas of the Radak that the child was only two. So this is the medrash that's a little hard to understand. So again, either he was more than two, or 2 years old was a different 2 years old. So source number three, again, the Gemara in Brachos, Lamed Aleph Amid Beis. Amar Rabbi Elazar said, Shmuel mora halacha lifnei rabo haya. Shmuel answered a question of law in front of his master, in front of his Rebbe, which is a crime. If you're unsure of a law, for a student to answer the law in the presence of his teacher or her teacher is considered to be inappropriate. If it's something that maybe, you know, I don't know, everybody knows or something, it's just clarifying something. But if there was something of uncertainty, so it's not considered to be proper. And not only that, it's considered that the student is actually chayiv benafsho. The student is, it's classified as a capital crime. Whether they would actually, it's not a capital crime on the books that you would actually put the person to death, but it's considered in that, because what's happening is a total disregard for the tradition, for what the teacher teaches. So shenemar, how do they know this? So the Medrash picks up on our psukim. Shenemar vishchatu asapar, the pasuk that we just read said they shechted the cow, vavieu asanara eli, and they brought the child to Eli. So the Gemara asks the question, Mishum devashchitu asapar hivio sanar el Eli? What's the connection? Because they shechted the animal, that's why they're bringing the boy to the Kohen? That doesn't make sense. Ella, rather, what happened? Amar lohen Eli. Eli said to the crowd, Karu Kohen. Call us a Kohen, a regular Kohen. Leisiv lishchot, so that the Kohen can go ahead and slaughter the animal. Chazinu Shmuel, so little Shmuel saw what's going on. The Havu Mahadri Basar Kohen, that they're looking for a Kohen available, a Mishchat to Shecht. Amar Lahu, and little Shmuel spoke up and said, Lama Lahu Lahadru Basar Kohen the Mishchat. Why are you looking for a Kohen to do the slaughtering of the animal? Shchita Bizar Ksheira. A non Kohen can do the Shchita. It's been a while since we brought Karbanos. There are four parts to bringing a Karban. You have to Shecht, you have to slaughter the animal. You have to accept the blood that's coming out of the animal in a receptacle. You have to bring that receptacle over to the Mizbeach, to the altar, and you have to sprinkle the blood on. So four steps. Slaughtering, accepting the blood, bringing the blood, and sprinkling the blood. Three of those four must be performed by a Kohen, and if a non-Kohen does it, it ruins everything. But Shechita is allowed. So he answered back, Shechita bizar k'shera. So what did he just do? He just upended his Rebbe. He just, Eli said, go look for a Kohen. Shmuel said, you don't have to. It's allowed for a non-Kohen. So what happened? Aisu l'kami de Eli, they brought him in front of Eli. Amar le, and he said, minalacha ha. How do you know this? Amar le, and Shmuel answered, miksiv v'shachar ha-Kohen. Does the pasuk say the phrase v'shachar ha-Kohen? V'hikrivu ha-Kohanim ksiv. All the pasuk says is the Kohanim have to offer the sacrifice, not actually slaughter it. So we learn, mikabala ve'elach mitzvah skuna, from the accepting the blood, and on, meaning the accepting of the blood, and the bringing to the altar, and the sprinkling, that's a Kohen. But mikan l'shchita she'er bizar. But the shchita, the actual slaughtering, a non-Kohen could do. Amar le, so Eli says to the little boy, me'mar shapir kamre. You said very well. Mihu mor halacha b'fnecha rabchat. But you answered a law in front of your teacher. V'chol amor halacha b'fnei rabu chayv misa. And anyone who answers the law in front of the teacher, they're chayv misa. So all of a sudden he says those words. And who has to come in to protect? Mother Chana. Mama Bear. Asya Chana v'kotzavcha kameh. Now the pasuk makes sense. Chana comes and she screams in front of Eli. Ani ha'isha hanitzeves imcha bazeh. I am the one who stood there, and I was the one standing with you. And now we understand why she's expressing her thoughts. She's right. You go back to the psukim. She's saying, "Please, my master, by your life, I'm the woman that stood there. This is before God. This is the child that I asked for." You have to take it into all the accounting, forget about punishing, and have rachamim, have mercy. And that's what happened. And that mercy was extended. So that this statement of the rabbis gives us a little bit of an insight as to why the language of the pasuk was so very strong. Now the last point is this ambiguous phrase that ends the chapter, vayishtachu sham lashem, and he bowed down to God. So who bowed down to who? Again, there's an asnachta, there's a pause right before that. This phrase seems to be an independent clause. The question is, who's bowing down to who? So our commentators give multiple choices, so you can take them all, take one, whichever you like. So one is that Elkanah bowed down. Elkanah bowed down to kind of accept the fact that Hannah had given her vow, the child had been delivered, and they were going to go on. The Metzudas David says it was Shmuel. Shmuel was bowing down. And as he began his service to God, he bowed down. And the third option is Eli, that Eli bowed down. Eli, who got to watch this miracle and had given the blessing, was kind of taking the whole scene in, that he had falsely accused Hannah, and then he had given her a blessing, and now she asked for the child, and the child was brought, so he bowed down. And that finishes what we consider to be Perek Aleph. We're out of time for today, but you'll see on Yom Tov, on the first day, when you look at the Haftorah, if I'm not mistaken, the Haftorah includes the first 10 psukim in Perek Beis. And the first 10... You can read it. You can read it, because I'm giving you a homework assignment. You read the first 10 psukim in Perek Beis. This is called Tfilas Chana. Many a student has been demanded that they memorize this Tfilas Chana, even though it's part of the written portion of the Torah, which is allowed to be written and actually shouldn't be oral. But that's for another discussion. I want you to think about one question. If you were Chana and you were thanking God, would this be the prayer that you say? And Be'ezus Hashem, we're not meeting again for a month, unfortunately. So the next time we meet, I'll remind you of this assignment, but you have a month to figure out the answer. It's a lot of time.